Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Christine Williams.
You are listening to Fiber Talk, that twice weekly podcast.
Sometimes that happens.
Yeah, sometimes it happens, yes. Twice weekly podcast for people who stitch. And our guest this week from Just Stitching Along is Krista Gramer. Hi, Krista.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I can't talk. Other than that, I'm fine. But I simply can't talk. So, you know, we'll just deal with that. So, Krista, Just Stitching Along, we talked about a couple weeks ago her new introduction, one of her new introductions at the Nashville show, Miss Lucy Calcutt, 1825. And got to meet Krista at the Nashville show and see the Lucy Calcutt model. It was the model. Yeah, it was the model. Boy, right. Is that beautiful.
It really is.
That's nice.
She's very colorful, very, you know, bright colors. I call her a happy sampler.
Yes. So we get to talk about that. We get to learn about Krista in general and stitching. And we're giving away a copy of Miss Lucy Calcutt, 1825. Am I saying that right? Calcutt? Is that how we say it?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. We're giving that away. And so what you have to do to win, to have a chance to win the copy of the sampler chart, not the sampler, but the chart, got to make your own sampler.
Right.
Is you go to the page for this podcast and you answer the question as we talk about various samplers through the show here and the girls that did them, you answer the question, which girl did two samplers in consecutive years? That's the question. So you just put, sign in or go into the wetalkfiber.com, the page for this podcast, and you just answer that question in the responses. And I'll keep track in order of people putting in their answer, and then we'll have a drawing. And let's say this is going up Sunday, so we'll say a week from today, a week from the Sunday it gets posted, at midnight Eastern time. So that'll give a full 7+ days for people to listen and participate in the drawing, and then the person that wins will get a copy. So there we have it. So the name of the girl who stitched consecutive samplers or samplers in consecutive years is the way you will win it, by getting that name right. And yes, you're right. We're making you listen to the entire podcast and pay attention. That's right. That's how it works. Okay, go, Christine. What?
Yeah, I was going to say, if we have to make people, then we have bigger problems.
We do. So far, that's not been a problem making them. They've been more than willing. But yeah. Okay, fine. So got to meet Krista. Was this, now, how many Nashville shows was this for you, Krista?
This was my very first one.
Oh, you were like me, a rookie.
Yes. Yeah, meeting a lot of new people.
Yeah.
So it was fun to get to see you there and see you in person. It's like when you hear a radio show and you know, you wonder what somebody necessarily looks like, you know, it's never what you always think, right?
Right.
So that's kind of like meeting you, you know. I knew your voice from listening to all the podcasts, but it was fun to also meet you in person.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry you
here.
Couldn't be there, Christine, too.
Hi. None more sorry than me, trust me.
I'm sure.
Well, maybe your family.
Yeah.
catching the brunt of it.
Yeah, that was rough. The Long Island Railroad did not do me right, but, you know, that's how it goes. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, so what was your reaction to the show? What did you, a lot of fun meeting people, seeing things? What was your experience?
It was a busy time. You know, it's 3 days filled with, you know, meeting a lot of people. And it was great to see designers that I've, you know, had bought their patterns in the past, and also many store owners that came in from all over the U.S. That over the past, you know, 15 years or so, I've, you know, ordered from, because my only outlet in some cases is to use online sources. Back in the late 90s, when I lived on Long Island, I used to have a local shop to me, and unfortunately they closed down, and which was so sad because I used to go there like once a week to mm-hmm. buy stuff and go. They used to have classes where we could learn different stitches and whatnot. But then the only sources that I had locally became like the big box stores, like Michael's and Joann's. Right. And they just didn't have all the materials that I was looking for after being used to them, you know, being readily available to me. So I used to then, you know, I went online, and back in those days, you know, online was really not what it is today. But I did find a few stores that luckily I could do ordering online. You know, this is back in the dial-up, you know, internet days. way back. way back. And, you know, it was funny to some of them. I noticed when I would look at their tags, I recognized them. And I said, you know, I used to order you from your store a very long time ago. And one in particular was the Elegant Stitch in Modesto, California. And also like the Silver Needle in Oklahoma. Those were some of the stores that, you know, had an online presence many years ago.
Early, so, right.
Yeah, yeah. So it was really fun to meet them in person now and, you know, have a chat with them. So between, you know, meeting the shop owners and the designers, it was a real fun time. And it was busy time, though. I mean, it was hard to get out of the room that I was working in with my samplers to go see what everybody else was doing. But in between, you try to run out and do what you can and see as much as you can. So it's a busy 3 days.
Yeah, that's one of the drawbacks of being an exhibitor at a show is you do want to go around and see what everyone else has, but you really need to be at your station.
Right, of course.
Trapped.
Yeah. Right. A little bit, yeah. But I did. I did get to see quite a bit, and there's a lot of great new designs coming out, many more samplers, reproduction samplers, as well as some prim designs and, you know, even some more modern things. And I got to visit with the people at Krennic a little bit with looking at their metallics and their collections of scissors that they were bringing. So there's all sorts of things, not just designs, but, you know, all the different tools of the trade that we use. So it was like a, you know, a kid in a candy store. I wanted to look at everything and have one of everything if I could. So it was a great experience.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. That you make a good point about samplers. Now you had two there, but I have number one. Once I got connected and started to understand this whole sampler world to the degree that I do, I've been amazed. But there were a lot more samplers, reproduction samplers of all types than I expected to see at that show. And boy, this area of the hobby, the sampler area of the hobby, seems to be very, very active and widespread. Do you see that?
Yes, I would agree. I feel that in the past few years, especially, more and more people have an interest in, you know, stitching these reproduction samplers and learning about the girls who stitch them, however possible. I guess they want to, you know, feel and learn about what it was like for these girls. It's hard to fathom that girls that were so young were able to do this type of work hundreds of years ago. So I think there's, I guess, maybe a little bit of a romantic feeling about it, a sentimentality that people just want to, you know, by stitching them themselves, they kind of wonder what, you know, it was like for that girl and who she was. So it's just been something that's really taken off in the last few years, more so. And I think with all the online groups that we have that support, you know, samplers as a whole, it's opening that world to many more people that didn't know about it. So It's just another avenue that people can find out about them and learn about them.
This is the one area. I mean, obviously the internet and Facebook and all blogs and all those things play a major role in this hobby today. But I think when it comes to samplers, that is particularly the case, that the sharing of information and, you know, a lot of these, especially these bigger samplers, take a long time to stitch. So you have that ongoing encouragement from fellow stitchers that keep you going and don't make you put it away for months at an end. And then all of the, I mean, there's, you know, sampler groups. There's just it's an exciting aspect of the hobby in terms of what people are doing. And it really is. I was having a discussion with someone, I forget who it was, about, you know, how if we have an 8-year-old or a 9-year-old child today, the thought of giving them a needle and thread and saying, here, create a sampler, for most parents just wouldn't even enter their minds. And then you go, you look at what these girls created back then, and clearly it was a learning tool, but also it was just an expectation, and what these little girls could do. And I got to wondering, I wonder as adults, once, if they could create this as a kid, what were they creating as adults? I don't know, maybe they just gave it up. I don't know.
I think the other thing though to take into account is that, you know, we're talking about this as if, you know, somebody handed a 7-year-old a needle and that 7-year-old had never done this before. These girls would have been stitching from the time that they could hold a needle, right? So that was my, not that my experience is everybody's experience, but the little stitching instruction I had as a very young child with a good English grandmother was, as soon as I could hold the needle, was backstitching, you know, along lines on, you know, muslin in a hoop. So by the time these girls were 7, they would have been stitching for 3 or 4 years, probably very, very regularly. So even though they're small children, they have none of the distractions that kids have today. They have none of the things, they don't have piano lessons and soccer practice and all of those things. So with that much time to be able to devote to it, imagine if you had that amount of time, or even any of our children had that amount of time and had started at such a young age, then you can start to picture how it is that they're able to do these things. For me, I think it's a little bit easier to imagine that way.
Right. I would think that back then, you know, it was part of the things that they needed to learn, mostly was a part of their education. And they were taught, you know, early on, just because it was something that they were supposed to learn as a part of their, you know, what they were supposed to learn as girls and women growing up in the household. And then they would, you know, be further educated into making these more formulated samplers based on patterns, you know, from booklets, because there had to have been some sort of, you know, patterns that were used, because so many motifs will appear on many samplers, you know. It wasn't just them just going off and doing whatever they wanted on the fabric, but or maybe they did on the side, but we don't see that. But you know,
that's the part I want to see.
Yeah, exactly, right? Where's those? But you know, obviously there was a specific type of booklet, and the teachers, you know, I guess, that shared these patterns for these girls to do, you know. It was something that all of them, I guess, between the ages of age eight, let's say, or maybe a little earlier than that, to age 12 or 13 or so, it's something that they all had to come to pass and do at some point in their education. So, it's
funny. When you talk about it as part of education, you know, that's another way. And I guess that's the benefit of doing a sampler too, is you think about it so many different ways as you're going through. Because at first I'm thinking about this as something that a child is doing, you know, for fun. And then as soon as you mention the word education, it turns into something they don't want to do. So then I'm imagining a little girl sitting at a table against her will, you know, exactly like a child would, you know, being forced. Okay, well, you have to do a half an hour, right. Like we would, you know, do with piano lessons today, you know, and imagine that child, you know. I look at a sampler and, you know, I think of this little girl stitching it, you know, lovingly and being so proud and happy. And maybe the whole time she was stitching it, she was mad because she was being forced to do something she didn't want to do. You know, who knows, you know?
True.
We don't know.
That's the thing. We don't really know the story necessarily. So it's helpful if, you know, some genealogy, information is available on them, and it can pinpoint more so, you know, perhaps where they were studying and learning these things. But that's not always the case either. So sometimes it's a mystery that we can't tell exactly what the story was.
Yeah, and that whole genealogy thing has really changed it too. I think it adds such a realism dimension to it. It makes these things come to life, and when you can find information, and you can't always find information either,
right?
Yeah, because that's the deal with your Gertrude's Garden, right? Is you simply have a reproduction sampler, but you simply can't find out anything, and there's no indication on it who did it.
Yes, with Gertrude's Garden, that sampler unfortunately didn't have a girl's name in it. You know, so there's nothing to really look up in a system like Ancestry or whatnot, to try to find out who she was. There's different clues on the sampler that can tell you a little bit about it based on the materials used. In that sampler, it was done in, like a cotton thread on a very loose canvas. And, you know, there's letters across the top. There's the regular alphabet that we would normally see. And then you'll see that there's a series of initials, which all end in the letter S. So you can assume that, you know, the person's last name was an S, perhaps, and it was a family sampler of some sort. But otherwise, you know, there's really not a lot that you can, you know, understand beyond that. You know, there's just not, you know, you have to just wonder and try to, you know, just think about what that person was, you know, trying to put together on this, on the linen for us. And she probably never thought that we would see it, you know, hundreds of years later.
Right.
So, you know, that's with Gertrude's Garden, and for that one, because she didn't have, there wasn't a girl's name to call it by, because, you know, most times when we see a sampler and it's reproduced, it's usually named after the girl that stitched it. And because there was no girl's name on that one in particular, a few things stood out to me on the sampler, and that was the initial near the top, there's a GS, where the G is a little bit smaller than the others for some reason in that line. Maybe she just missed a stitch, but it still just stood out to me. And that happens to be the initials of my grandmother, so who was Gertrude. So from that, it made me think further about the other motifs on the sampler. And there happens to be two windmills on each side of the sampler in the design. And again, that brought me back to my grandmother, because where she was born and raised as a young girl, there was a windmill in her town. And then when she moved here to America and lived in Connecticut, there was a windmill right in her town again. So that's kind of where I got the idea to call it Gertrude's Garden.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, I felt it needed a name.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Well, it's a beautiful sampler too. It's really very nice.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. That was the new one that I released for Nashville this year. And the Lucy Calcutt sampler I finished that in the fall and it was released around September time. But the it was nice to have the model there so everyone could see it at Nashville, because it really is so, you know, amazing to see it in person. When, you know, it's one thing to see it as a photo on a computer screen or on paper, but to see the samplers in person with the stitches and the threads, it gives a whole different, you know, view to it. So it was nice that I got to see it again. I had sent the original model off to the Attic Needleworks in Arizona for a while, so that other, you know, stitchers could see it and be inspired by it. And then it came back to Nashville so that I could have it on display there. So, and she's continuing her tour, Lucy.
Where did Lucy go now?
That'll be the new theme. Where in the world is Lucy? Yeah. She was sent over to Sassy Jack Stitchery in North Carolina. So Kimberly Young of Sassy Jack's took her with her to her shop, and now she'll be displayed at Sassy Jack's for the coming future. I don't know. So hopefully if people are in the area, they can stop by and see her in person.
I think it's great that you guys, just about all of you sampler people, are so willing to let those things go and be seen so that people can enjoy them and be inspired by them. I think it's because the natural inclination would be to buy one of those things and keep it home and protected. But I think it's great you guys are so willing to share.
Well, I wanted to, once I stitched it, you know, I could just have kept it here in my apartment and hung it on the wall and looked at it every day. And I'm sure it would have brought me a lot of smiles to see it every day. But I think it's also a great thing, you know, for other people to be able to see it and enjoy it as well. So, you know, what better place than a stitching shop where other people will be inspired to want to stitch her as well. So yeah. That was the whole point of me wanting to try this whole process. Lucy Calca was my first sampler that I reproduced, and you know, it was basically because I just wanted to try to do it. And so it was a learning process from beginning to end, and you know, it's I'm glad that I went through the whole process. You know, I had seen other people charting the samplers of the antiques and then stitching them and all of that. And I said, you know, let me try this now and see how it goes. So, and it did take a while because, you know, just learning how to do the color coordinating the right way, you would think, you know, with the thousands of colors we have available to us. And, you know, it's like I used DMC thread when I stitched Lucy Calcutt. And with all the hundreds of colors, you would think that it should be easy to match a color from, you know, on an antique sampler. And it's just not that simple all the time. So, you know, there was a lot of trial and error in the learning process where I would stitch a certain color and I just didn't think it was exactly the way it should be. So then I would take it back out and then try it again, a new color. So, Krista, you know, it was a lengthy process for me, but I'm glad that I did it the way I did.
Take us through the process. That's your first sampler, so you got to experience all the ups and downs. Take us through the process of doing that sampler. What is that all
where
like?
Where do you start?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Where do you start? I started, first of all, with the inclination of wanting to do it, and a friend of mine, Nicola Parkman, who I believe many of your listeners will know well. I know she's been on your podcast before from Hands Across the Sea. She had Lucy Calcutt sampler in her collection of antiques, and when I had been speaking with her, I had said, you know, I would like to maybe try this one day, and so, you know, that's how it came up about that I chose this sampler to reproduce. And so from there, you know, it's basically I did it by doing photographs because Lucy Calcutt is actually over in the United Kingdom and I'm here in Connecticut in the United States. So by the process of taking detailed photos, I used, you know, a program on my computer called PC Stitch, and, you know, graphed out all the stitches that Lucy had done originally onto this program and played with the colors and the symbols that I wanted to use. And then once I charted the entire sampler out is when then I got out the, you know, the linens and picked the colors for the linens and got stitching. So, I mean, that was the main process, but with regards to the trial and error process is the colors, just the making sure the colors seemed right to me. I would have to go back and double check quite frequently that I felt that it was coming along the way I expected based on the original. So
now when so you did all of this without having the original in your hands then?
Correct. It was done by doing from photographs of the original.
So yes. Nicholas sent you a whole rack of photos and you
correct.
Just, so you had a big puzzle in front of you.
Yes. Yep. And I pieced it all together and matched the colors with the DMC thread as best as I could. You know, it's like I said, it's, and some of the threads were not always the same color throughout. So I had to decide upon what color I thought would be the one to represent what Lucy originally had imagined. Yeah. I think she was just a fun child because she really used a lot of colorful, you know, threads. I mean, she used a lot of red and pink and purple. It's that's why I call it a very happy sampler.
Did you try to stitch the colors the way they would have been originally, or did you stitch them as they appear now, aged?
They're stitched as they appear, I guess, now aged, if you will, because it was from the front of the sampler. I would imagine that this sampler was kept in the right conditions because it wasn't very faded. You know, these vibrant colors are what you see pretty much mm-hmm. on the front of the original antique. So I know, you know, we were used to seeing some with very dull colors and washed out colors from either being out in sunlight, you know, and not protected as well. But or some people will also take a sampler and open it up and then look at the back to see if how the colors may have looked, you know, with, you know, without any, you know, sunlight on them. So it's interesting to see which way people prefer to do them. I like I said, I did it from the front, and it was nice that these colors were so vibrant to this day, considering this sampler is almost 200 years old.
Yeah. That's the part that fascinates me. I was going to ask a question, and Christine asked the very question I was going to ask, is it seems like there's a judgment call that you have to make on those colors to some degree. And that whole part of the charting, because I get the count stitches and chart them on a grid. That, you know, that's just work. But to figure out the colors and try to stay as true as possible, to me, that's the art and the talent to pull that off, whether you can see the front or the back. And and then I wonder, all these samplers are done on a darker, on a non-white linen. And is that because we want them to look
it's
old?
It's possible. Well, to be honest, I think that also plays into, you know, how the sampler was displayed, you know, and the linen will be aged just as well as the threads would be, you know. And so it's hard to say that whether all of them are done on white or originally, you know, and if it's the aging that makes it look the color that it is, you know, it's really hard to say. It's really hard to say. Yeah.
'Cause to me, it would be, the natural thing would be, well, they must have started with white linen, so that's what we're going to put it on.
Yeah.
But we don't know that. We don't, you know what I mean? You would think that, all right, all these old things, 200 years old, we know that you know, we can assume they were white, and now they're just old and yellowed and dirty.
Right.
And so we don't go back
again,
to the white. So
some of
know.
Us like the look that it's old and dirty. So
yeah. Okay.
So that's why we have these linens now that are, you know, dyed all these colors, you know, to choose from, and some of them are dyed and done with what you call like a vintage style, so that, you know, there's, it looks like it's been like stained, like with almost like a done with a coffee dyeing or something like that, to give it, you know, a mottled type look. So I think people like that antique look about it, and that's why some people would prefer that it looks exactly like the way the model did. You know, I mean, the original did.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That's so, just it's
even
just an,
even more colors and things to think about, you know, more decisions.
Right, exactly. Because yeah, I've thought many times, what if somebody just up and did one on white linen? But then I thought, well, wait a minute. If I did that and put all those hours in and then hated it, because it was too stark, then, you know, I'd be upset there. But, you know, I just wonder.
And then there are people who will stitch it all on, let's say, a white or a cream, like a light colored linen, and then they'll dye it after the fact. So that's another idea too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's another way that people will, you know, will do it at times. Although you wouldn't do that if you're working with silk. You know, that wouldn't be a good thing.
No,
because you can't get that, you know, wet. So, you would want to do that only with the cotton threads that are, the right, you know, color right. fast threads right. that, you know, you don't want to mess. You don't want to do all that work and then that would be the wrong thing to do. But, but it's, you know, it just shows you how many different options and preferences people have with regards to what they want the finished product to look like. So all those factors go into it when you're, I guess, you know, charting and recreating what one of these girls did from long ago.
So at your first reproduction sampler, what were the biggest challenges for you as you went through getting it charted and ready to stitch?
The biggest one was the colors.
It was,
and
okay.
Yeah. And like I said, one or two of them, I was halfway through the whole sampler and I had to take it all out and redo it. So that was what was time consuming. I wasn't thrilled with that part, but I wanted it to be right. And you know, like when you have, let's say you miscounted and you ponder on it, like, oh, should I take all of this out and go backwards, you know, or can I just tweak it enough to make it, you know, I'll probably be the one that would say, every time I look at it, I'll remember where that stitch is.
Yep.
So
right.
I would probably want to just, even if it was like, you know, a few hours work, I would take it all back out to redo it properly. That's just who I am. You know, some people would just tweak it a little bit and just keep going. Like Lucy, I felt that, you know, she would just stitch along as you go. And if certain things weren't going to fit where she wanted them to, she just didn't care, it seemed. She just went on to something else. Like there's a motif that's almost a mirror image right around the middle section. It has on the right side, there's a little butterfly on top. But on the left side, she couldn't fit that butterfly because there's a white urn there now. So I don't think it bothered her, though. Like something like that might have bothered me. I would have wanted to move something so that I could make it fit. But she just seemed to just stitch along as she went, and that's it. She just let things sit where they would go and was happy with it maybe that way. So it had a wonderful effect. So it gives it a little bit of quirkiness, which I like. It's a little bit of charm.
Well, and isn't that exactly what makes these so much fun, is all the little weird things that you find. I'm sure if you're charting it, those... Yeah, they really hit you, where someone who just stitches it may not realize it till after the fact that this is a little different, where you would normally think it would be symmetrical, or why isn't there a butterfly on the other one? But
right.
As you're going through charting it, you just immerse yourself in that design.
And Lucy, she was, you know, quite, I guess, ambitious, if you will. She also stitched another sampler in age 9. This one was dated, you know, with her age 8 and in 1825. And she also did a second sampler of similar size in 1826. So, which is a little unusual for a young, you know, girl. We don't usually see too many samplers that are, you know, duplicate samplers by the same girl. You know, sometimes we find sister samplers or, you know, something of that sort, but that have a connection to each other. But not many, there aren't that too many that are found that are stitched by the same girl again. So the second sampler that she stitched is very similar in nature, with some of the motifs are similar to this first one that she did at age 8. And but the color palette is also very complementary. It's very similar. So that Lucy Calcutt, age 9, will be forthcoming in the future. I have started working on that one, and it will be released hopefully, I don't know, about the near future, but in the future. Mm-hmm. I'm only at the charting process at this point. So.
And that, you know, that again is so impressive, because the 1825, the one at age 8, I mean, that's a big sampler in relative terms. I mean, that's
I know.
And for her to do two, I would challenge any stitcher today to do two of that size in 2 years.
I agree.
Just to find the time.
I'm feeling challenged too. Yes.
Do you notice any like glaring differences in the stitching as far as the quality or technique or things that she tries to do differently in the second one from the first?
No, the stitch quality seems to be the same. I felt that her stitches in the antique were quite done well. You know, the entire sampler is done in cross stitch only, so there's no specialty stitches of any sort. But it's just the placement of the motifs are a little bit different, and I think a little bit more thought out. Mm-hmm. So maybe she, you know, as she got a little bit older and had done the practice on her first sampler, you know, she took that knowledge as she went into the age 9 sampler and, you know, thought about the placement maybe perhaps a little better. I don't know. But as I'm charting it, I think, you know, those things will come to light to me. I've only started with so far the border. And as we all know, we want the border to meet. And that's my first challenge. And so before I can even start stitching it on linen, I need the border to meet. And so, you know, I'm off and running, but, you know, it will take some time to come to life altogether. But I'm excited about it, because yeah. I think anybody who likes the first Lucy will also enjoy seeing the second Lucy, because they're very complementary to each other. So she used all the same color palette, and she must have probably continued using the same threads.
Yeah, she had a pile.
Yeah.
But yep. See, that's yeah. So much fun, because I look at that here, Lucy Calcutt, a sampler in each of 2 years, and then you look at Nicholas Uffendel, sisters, where you would have a pair of them, sisters, and to be able to hang up pairs like that and have them connected, I think is just so much fun, and really makes an excellent display too. That to be able to tell the story, look, this little girl did this at 8, and then a year later did this one at 9.
Right. Yeah, it's very special. Yeah, and unusual. Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing the thing with Lucy Calcutt is there are every one of those motifs you could just pull off and stitch by itself and have it stand by itself. I can't get past the just to the right of center, the grapes. That one is the one that every time I look at it, I go, wait, just that one by itself on a piece of linen would be worth everything.
Yep. Each one could be either done as an ornament or as a bookmark, or, you know, you could make, you know, any type of a small type of, or, you know, pin cushion. There's so many different things that could be done with them. And, you know, we see all that type of creativity in the groups that I see everybody, you know, work on the things they're working on. It amazes me what they come up with to do. So, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised to see somebody doing that, especially if, let's say, you like the sampler and it's just maybe, you know, you already have, let's say you're working on another project, but you want a little something to work on, you know,
just a little break.
Yeah, a little break. And it's something that you could just, you know, quickly stitch one of the motifs in a weekend, if you will. And, you know, it gives you a different change of pace, you know? So instead of committing to the entire sampler at one time, if you can't do that, you could always do something smaller in nature. So, yeah.
So how did you get started stitching? What got you doing this?
Long time ago. Maybe, I don't know, about 35 years ago, maybe. I started, you know, I learned, like maybe any other teenager would get into crafts and whatnot, by going to their local Michaels store and finding, you know, DMC and Ada thread and kits. And, I mean, my family, was also very creative. My grandmother, my mother, mainly in crocheting, and yarn work. But for some reason I took to County Cross Stitch. And that's kind of where I stayed. I do a little bit of knitting, but I mainly stay with the cross stitch. And I used to just make a lot of presents for family members and coworkers and friends who had anniversaries and weddings and, you know, babies and all sorts of things like that. What I realized, though, after I was stitching into my 20s and 30s, was I looked around my apartment and I realized I never stitched anything for myself. So that's when I started. I said, wait a minute, something has to change here. I need to have something on my own wall now. And I started finding things that I wanted to, you know, frame up and put on my wall or make into a pillow for my own apartment so I could enjoy it in my house. So, and that's when I was spending more time at the local shop we had, which was called the Cross Stitch Cottage at the time. And, you know, that's how I learned more and more about the different specialty stitches out there. I was taking classes and, you know, meeting a lot of other stitchers that just enjoyed it. And unfortunately, when that closed, I kind of got away from the craft for probably a good 5-6 years or so, because I just didn't know any other stitchers nearby. And I didn't have a place to go shop and just... You know, I used to just like to go to the shop and, you know, meander around and look at all the patterns and all of that. But, you know, I guess I just got away from it because I didn't have that routine in my life anymore of going to the shop. So, after about 5 or 6 years, I decided to get back to the craft, and I had then moved to, Connecticut at the time, and I decided, you know, to look on the internet. And wow, I was so surprised to see that the blog world existed. I didn't even know that there was a blog world, but it not only did it exist, but it was just filled with blogs of stitchers. And I was seeing, you know, patterns that I had never seen before being created and stitched. And it really opened my eyes and excited me to the fact that, you know, this world was actually thriving, even though I didn't know it was. It actually was all around the world. And everybody was still, you know, interacting with each other. It just wasn't in person, you know, in their local community, let's say. Mm-hmm. And that just was, I thought it was just fabulous. It was just exciting and a great way for so many people to be interactive and feel like you're stitching with others, when you don't have that, you know, a group nearby that you can stitch with. So, and that's when we also then got into creating a group in the Facebook world as well, which is even more interactive, I think, than the blog world. So, I mean, back with the blogs, I created my own, which is called Just Stitching Along, because I just wanted to be involved like everybody else was with showing what they were working on and stitching and just what was going on in my life, in my everyday world. But then once we got into the Facebook world and Instagram world, it's a little bit more interactive because people can immediately comment and you can have a conversation, you know, about what's going on. And if people have questions about how to do something or they need help with where to find something, you know, we have members that will have those answers. And we help each other out that way. It's like our own stitching community, and it's worldwide now. It's really amazing.
Yeah, that is fun. So what turned you to reproduction samplers?
I just like the look of them, you know. You know, the story behind them, of course, is special. But I just like the look of them, and, you know, certain ones I'll be more drawn to than others, but I mean, I like the whole alphabets and the, you know, the certain motifs that you'll see with houses and certain animals and whatnot. But I don't know. I think it's one of those things that you just say, you know, everybody has what appeals to them. And I think samplers is just one of the things that appeals to me. I also do like some of the modern things that are out there as well. But, you know, this world of reproductions is quite interesting. I enjoy going to museums a lot and looking at any kind of textiles and stitched works that may be there as well. So I think that I just because I have a interest in that direction, it makes, you know, this a sampler is more appealing for me as well because there's a history to it. And that's what we want to know more about. I wish I knew more about Lucy Calcutt. I am hopefully going to keep searching on that and we'll come up with some answers as to who she was. everybody keeps asking me, who was she? And so I hope I can find something, and you know, down the road, maybe when the Lucy Age 9 will be available, maybe I'll have a better, some better answers for that.
Yeah, and that's just the thing with the internet. There's every chance that a whole nother channel of information is going to open up at any time and give you exactly what you're after.
Right. Yep. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, just as the, like when I'm working on my own family tree, you know, online, if I hit a brick wall and I just can't get further on it, I just go away from it for a little bit and, you know, go back after a year or two. And, you know, lo and behold, there's all this extra information now from, you know, more data being uploaded and other people working on trees right. too that connect to my tree. You know, that's the fun of it, you know, to keep searching for it because it'll show up. Eventually, you'll find your answers, I think.
Yeah, I often wish my aunt was still alive today because she was the genealogy historian in our family, and she did it all by sending letters and writing everything down and following up when somebody had a baby and tracing all the way back as far as she could with what she had. But did it all manually and, you know, and basically just by sending out letters constantly and making people update all the time. And if she were alive now, she'd just go nuts because she could do so much more, so much faster. And I have a feeling she'd never leave her computer because too much to learn.
Yeah, back in the day, they had to do it by snail mail, you know, writing the letters and waiting. And waiting and hoping that they'd come back with an answer. But nowadays, it's at the, you know, a click of a button, and we can find things instantaneously. So it's amazing.
We always were amazed with her. You know, I'm sure that many of us at one time or another thought she was just nuts. But but see, she, like my family, the Parrs, started because the British used to bring orphans over to fight in the Revolutionary War. And there were two brothers, last name Parr, don't know their first names. They're buried in Illinois somewhere, in some field somewhere. I've seen pictures. But she traced it all the way back to that. And wow. Just by using snail mail that these two orphans were brought over. And and then actually found a path that got us all the way back to Catherine Parr of Henry VIII. But and she did it all by snail mail and has had it all documented. I hope somebody kept it. But to me, the orphan part was how our family got to this country, was the British bringing orphans over to fight for them in the war. And, she traced all that down and always, and actually these samplers have made me have much more respect for what she accomplished the hard way.
Well, to trace back to Catherine Parr, that's quite impressive.
I have no idea how she did that, but the documentation actually existed. She found it. So, yeah, I don't know.
That's wonderful.
I don't feel any sense of royalty, though, believe me. None whatsoever. Oh. Yeah.
Well, she was wife number 8, I think, so.
Oh, was it? Yeah.
I believe so.
Was
yeah.
she? Okay. I don't even know that much, so you just taught me something new.
Don't quote me on that. I'm going from a poor memory, but I believe.
Well, you're ahead of me. You're ahead of me. Krista, it seems to me, the other part about this whole sampler thing is it seems like there's an endless supply of these antique samplers, these old samplers. I just expect at some point people to say, look, we can't find any more.
Yeah, you would think, right?
Yeah.
It does. They just seem to just more and more everywhere you turn. You know, there's always, you know, antiques available for sale. And it's just, I don't know where they are all coming from, but there's thousands out there apparently. And you know, you can find, I mean, there's images of them everywhere, and that's where in our group we have during the weekends I post up jigsaw puzzles of them, and you know, ever, I'm always finding and sourcing that. Them yeah. from like Google Images or Pinterest. You know, many people are saving these images because they must, you know, like certain things about each one, but there's an unlimited supply, so it shows you how many of these girls, you know, were busy little bees stitching along, you know, stitching along doing their what I would call their studies. This is more like study work for them, you know, their ABCs. It's there's plenty for everyone to keep stitching. That's for sure.
Yeah, and don't ever stop doing those puzzles. I love doing those things.
They seem to be very popular. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And I even
many
did,
people enjoy them.
Yeah, I even did an account so I can time myself now, so it's become a thing for me. That's where you get them, is just pictures that you see as samplers, and then you just make them into a puzzle.
Yeah, they're just, you know, sourced, like I said, off of either Google Images or Pinterest is where I find them primarily. And, you know, sometimes I'm looking for ones that maybe fit a certain theme we're having, you know, as a party, you know, a party theme. But otherwise, no, there's so many to look at, you know. Quakers, there's so many different kinds and from different regions. It's just really unlimited. Yeah. It's amazing to have all this, you know, to see nowadays.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that, now of course I should have written down, what is the name of the group that you administer?
This is Our Sampler Years.
Yes. Yeah. That's very active. It's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite groups. And, and I love the way you have a theme each weekend where we can, you know, whatever it might be, and people post pictures, and boy, there's a there's a lot of people with a lot of samplers to pull from. It's kind of neat.
Yeah, we have, I think, over 6,000 members now.
Wow.
And, yeah, both myself and Nicola Parkman are you know, admins of the group. And, you know, the members seem to really enjoy having a certain theme each weekend to you know, share their works about. It could be like a Quaker sampler weekend, or sometimes we even do things that are not stitching. We talk about books and other things just so that we learn more about each other. But it's been a lot of fun and very interactive. You know, everybody seems to really enjoy sharing the works that they've done and are inspired by it. We get many people who are then want to stitch something or buy something. You know, a lot of people call it the enabling group, because we enable everybody to want to buy more things and have more, you know, stash as we call it. But it's all fun. It's how I see it. It's, you know, a hobby and it's fun. So,
well,
as long as it's fun, it's good.
it really is a great group of people. Actually, all the Facebook groups that I'm a member of, they're just handled so well, and everybody is just pleasant, and it's really, really a nice escape for me. I don't know. I'm sure it is for you too, Christine.
And it sort of makes up for the lack of a local shop, doesn't it? Because if you don't have that shop to go to, you know, sort of handle threads and meet people and have fellow stitchers and other people that sort of enjoy the things that you do, you can do it virtually. And so it's not the same. It's maybe a little bit more distant, but so many more people this way.
Absolutely.
So you feel connected, at least in some way.
Yes, absolutely. For me especially, you know, we don't have people, you know, locally, at least not that I've found where I live, that have the interest in this specific type of stitching. We have many groups that love knitting, you know, knitting circles and all of that. But
the
for some reason stitching, and I don't know if it's because of where I am in the metro area, I'm not really sure, but needlepoint is very big for this area, and knitting, but counter cross stitch, I don't really see too many people talking about that locally. So to have, you know, all of these members who enjoy the same thing, they have the same love of this craft, all interacting, and, you know, it's a great place to share the work and not feel like you're all by yourself just doing it alone, because it's nice to get feedback from other people about new things to try, stitches to try. There's always something to learn, and that's what we also try to promote in our group. It's not only the sharing and the, you know, the camaraderie, if you will, about you know, all of us doing the same type of work, but it's also about learning about other types of stitching and embroidery that's out there. And you know, if I should take, let's say, a trip to a museum and I see different textiles there that I think, you know, would be of interest, I will share that with the group. It's just to broaden our knowledge about embroidery in general, as well as, you know, with a focus on samplers, which we all enjoy. So there's a lot to talk about with this craft.
Yep.
So
true. So what's your stitching world like? You get to stitch every day? You got your own little place you got your own little corner, or what? How do you go about it?
Yeah, I do have my own little corner. I'm actually sitting in it right now. It's a nice, comfortable wingback chair, and I like to sit here so I can watch some TV while I stitch normally. And I like to put my pattern up on my laptop computer so I can see it from there. I don't work so much off of paper, so it's a perfect little setup for me here. I don't really get to stitch every single day. I work full time, so I try to do a lot of stitching more so on the weekends, where I can sit and really dedicate a nice chunk of hours to it. because I like to sit down and stitch for a long stretch. I don't tend to stitch for like 20 minutes and put it away. So in the evening, sometimes I come home from work and I'm a little too bleary-eyed, or, you know, I want to watch the dancing show and I need to pay attention or something, who knows. You know, so during the week, I don't always get to pick up my needle every day. But, you know, I do when I can.
hoop, scroll frame. Yeah.
I use a hoop. I hold a hoop in my hand, and I like it best of all because I can hold it close to me. I so far I'm not using a magnifier, but I think that's to come soon, especially as I try. I've been stitching on 36 count linen, and I do have some 40 count that I've recently got. So I'm trying to get to the higher count linens because it does look very nice, the tiny stitches on it. But my eyes just can't deal with the tight, small, the little tiny holes. Can't always see them anymore. But, the hoop works fine for me. I used to stitch in hand as well, but I found that the fabric, the linen, would actually kind of twist itself, you know, from on the diagonal from holding it. So I got away from that because I like to keep it, you know, straight and taut in the hoop. So that's what works best for me. I can sit back with my feet up and hold my hoop close to me where I can see it.
So you take stitching with you to work or just keep it at home?
Yeah, no, just keep it at home. I don't really have the time to or a place to sit and do it at work, unfortunately. I just have my little chair here, and this is where I enjoy doing it at home.
Yeah.
Hey, it's like a little respite spot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Nothing wrong with that. A little escape.
No. Nope. Yep. That's yep. Right. Yep. We all need to find our comfortable spot and find, you know, it's such a peaceful hobby. At least that's how it should be.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hopefully that's how we, you know, we find it when we're not frustrated about it. So, I find I have the patience for it. Not everybody does. Most people I show my work to, especially like my coworkers and my friends, and they just are amazed, and they're like, they just can't even fathom the idea of, you know, up to over two, you know, with the two threads and, you know, counting so precisely. But that's what I think I like about it more so, because I know where every stitch is supposed to go, and yep. There's something about that that I like. So,
well, there's that escape. It's just an escape.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's soothing.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. So,
all right, we gotta end this, Krista.
Okay.
All right. It was
It was a pleasure. Yeah. Thank you for chatting with me.
Thanks for doing
Thank you
for
joining us.
Yeah. Okay. So one last time, if you want to win a copy of Lucy Calcutt, 1825, you just go to wetalkfiber.com and the page for this podcast, and in the comments, you just put down the name of the little girl who stitched two samplers in consecutive years, and just put that in there. And if your response doesn't show up right away, that's because I have to approve the responses. If you're new to posting, it has to get approved. So it will show up. I'll get to it. I try to do them right away, but I don't always, you know, paying jobs sometimes. So, but it will get there. So put that in there, and then we'll accumulate that between now and midnight Eastern time, a week from now, Sunday night a week from now, and then we'll have a drawing, and someone will win, and we'll send it to them. And that's how it'll be. And Krista, yes. Thank you so much. It was a lot
wonderful.
Of fun.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you both. I appreciate it.
Thanks to everyone for listening.